Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we get started, I want to mention that KBOO's in the first week of our spring membership drive. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. Not only that, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So help us reach our $56,000 fundraising goal this spring. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. For decades, we've been sold the storyline that natural gas is the best and cleanest fuel for cooking and heating. But in recent years, studies are showing that methane is a destructive greenhouse gas, and that's what natural gas really is methane, and that leaks from gas appliances pose serious health risks. Now there are burgeoning alternatives to gas appliances, electric heat pumps, and induction stoves. And that poses a direct threat to gas utilities such as Northwest Natural, who fears that if customers develop negative opinions of gas as an energy source, that will affect the company's bottom line. Today we talk with Melanie Clout with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Healthy Climate Action Team about the dangers of gas appliances and the mendacity of the gas industry, which, much like the tobacco industry, is trying to hide the health and environmental threats their industry promulgates. Melanie, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's always exciting when I do the show live, which I've been doing sporadically since last summer, and it's really nice to see you, Melanie, mask on and all, in person as opposed to over a Zoom meeting. So I hope we can do more of this.
Indeed.
Well, while we've all been dealing with the pandemic for the last over 2 years, the fossil fuel industry has just been steamrolling ahead, trying to keep itself alive. And on the other hand, the climate movement has also been making a lot of strides. And recently, the city of Eugene passed an ordinance which will prohibit any gas installations in new construction in the city, I think, by 2030.
Yeah, it hasn't actually passed yet. They had a work session last week, and although there were people who testified in favor of no new gas in new buildings at a 4-to-1 ratio, and most of the councilors seemed to be in favor of it, because of pressure from the gas industry, they took out a bunch of full-page ads. They tried to have some AstroTurf groups testify against having any gas ban. It was put off until July for the next work session. We're still hopeful that that ban will be able to go ahead, but it has not passed yet.
And that's an example of what we're going to talk about today, which is, in a way, we can be looking at the fossil fuel industry really going through a series of death rattles. But in the course of these death rattles, they would like to take down the rest of the world with them. And there seems to be a real desperation on the part of the frack gas industry to paint itself as a new green alternative. And this brings me back. I was in a workshop for environmental journalists back in 2002. Which seems like a really long time ago. And there was a discussion about whether natural gas and nuclear power were bridge fuels. Now, back in 2002, I mean, nuclear power, in my mind back then, totally off the table. We can't even go there again. Natural gas was an interesting thing because a lot of the studies that have come out since then hadn't awakened us to just how dangerous methane is as a threat to global warming.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, what we thought back then was that it was cleaner to burn natural gas than to burn coal. And a lot of electricity was being made from burning coal. So that seemed like a logical thing. What we didn't understand back then was two things: the direct climate effect of methane, which is what natural gas is, that it's an extremely potent greenhouse gas. And number two, we didn't understand how much leakage there is along the whole supply chain from the wells at the fracking sites, the pipes, and as it turns out, even in our homes from our gas stoves when they are turned off.
So it's been really interesting to see how the gas industry is trying to repaint itself as a green, clean alternative to whatever. So one of the things that they've been talking about a lot, and Northwest Natural has been responsible for this in a lot of ways, promoting themselves as now a provider of what they're calling renewable natural gas. So let's talk a little bit about what that is and why. Well, it might be renewable, but it might not be that green.
Yeah, so renewable natural gas is methane that's produced by any kind of anaerobic decomposition of you know, your sewage, your farm sewage, your landfills, anything that decomposes in anaerobic situations will form methane. Now, you can capture some of this methane and potentially put it to use, but the fact is, it is still methane. And because it's still methane, it's a greenhouse gas, it leaks, and when you burn it, it produces carbon dioxide, which warms our planet also. The other thing that's really interesting is that Northwest Natural wants to claim that there is a sufficient supply of methane, biomethane as I call it. I don't like the term renewable natural gas because it's got two kind of greenwashing words in it, renewable and natural. And what it really is methane that comes from biologic sources. So I use the term biomethane as much as I can. Anyway, Northwest Natural backed a bill a couple of years ago to do an analysis of how much of this biomethane would there be in Oregon. And even the most optimistic estimations, it would be less than a fifth of the amount of natural gas that we currently use in our homes and businesses right now. So there's really no way that this biomethane can replace the fossil methane that we're currently using in our homes. They did, again, an industry-backed bill in the legislature, gave Northwest Natural the ability to charge customers more for biomethane than for fossil gas. And so they have plunged ahead with trying to get some sources of biomethane, including from pig farms in Nebraska. Now, just to be clear, this biomethane is not passed in pipes to us. It's what they call renewable thermal credit. So they kind of get the credit for the biomethane that comes from industrial agriculture back in the Midwest. And it's just, I think, a pretty clear example of how there is not enough biomethane to ever make a dent in the amount of fossil methane that we're using.
Well, a number of years ago, I was doing a project that took me to Tillamook a lot, and I learned all about the methane digesters that they were using for the Tillamook dairy. And that seemed like a very good idea, actually. And what's interesting is when you take something that works really well on a small scale, I mean, in those days, they were talking about using that to compensate for all the methane releases and horrible waste from confined animal feed operations. And it didn't even translate to that. So then I'm thinking about trying to take the idea of methane digesters, which would work on a small family farm, dairy farm, and translate it to providing natural, quote, natural gas for an entire region. I wonder how they think they can get there.
Well, the fact is that the factory farms that are using biodigesters are the only ones who can afford to install this equipment, and a small family farm really cannot afford to do it. So there's kind of a an incentive to increase something that we would really prefer not to see increased, which are these factory farms that create a lot of local pollution. Now, there probably is some role for biomethane in our decarbonized world, because there are going to be some industries that have a difficult time using anything other than natural gas. And I'm thinking of maybe in the marine sector or in some of the heavier industries. But one thing for sure is that we should not be using this biomethane to heat our homes. That's a waste of this very small resource. There are some places where we can't get rid of the biomethane, say from a sewage treatment plant or a landfill, and we would want to use that biomethane. So there is a small niche role, and I think most of us would agree to that, but again, not for home heating.
So it feels to me like there's some kind of what they call creative accounting going on with Northwest Natural, that they're claiming that they are going to be using renewable natural gas, and this is the reason why they're green, but they don't talk about the percentage that it would actually be. So they give you the illusion that, that when you sign on to Northwest Natural, you're going to be getting all what they call RNG. But in reality, what's the percentage that would really be RNG? And then how do they get away with that?
Well, you know, up until recently, according to our friends at the Citizens Utility Board, there was not a single drop of renewable natural gas in our home heating system. And even now, it may not be any more than 1% of the gas that's in the mix. So it's a tiny, tiny amount. Now, they claim that they have, you know, a pool of things out there and they can do more, but I think the latest estimate from Northwest Natural was maybe 3%. Oh, wow, that's really fabulous.
What's also kind of concerning is the way that Northwest Natural is promoting itself, that they have this major advertising campaign. I mean, I am a customer of Northwest Natural. I imagine you probably are too.
I no longer am as of last week.
Congratulations. And I'm trying to figure a way to wean myself off of it too. So I get these flyers in with our bills that are promoting themselves. And where is that money coming from that they're promoting themselves as this new green alternative?
Well, you know, we don't really know. And Northwest Natural tends to push the boundaries of, is it the truth or is it a lie? In my opinion, they push it really far. Maybe they stop just short of, you know, us being able to take them to task, but it's pretty darn close. So, you know, they have this big campaign. It's on their website. They have pictures of cows, pictures of daisies. And one of the things that really irks me is that they have been pushing the line that natural gas is a reliable fuel when the power goes out, which really isn't true. You know, you can't run your furnace if you have no electricity. Maybe you can light your stove manually, but they have something on their website that says no power, no problem. You can heat your home. And, you know, the fact is, even if you have a natural gas fireplace, you might be able to warm your hands over it, but you're not going to be heating your home.
I will actually say this is the only time I ever was happy that I had gas was last year with the power outages. Our power was out for about 3 days. And we're all gas. We installed everything in 1993. It was the way to go in 1993. We could cook on the stove. We couldn't use the oven. We had no furnace. We had hot water heater because we unfortunately have a pilot hot water heater. So it actually worked in the without any electricity. And then we have a really nice radiant heater, gas heater in the living room. And it did heat the house.
Did it?
It's a really good one. So I felt like it was a funny feeling of this contradiction of, on the one hand, I want to get off gas. On the other hand, thank God we had gas for those 3 days.
Well, I think one thing to think about is how many days did we spend without power versus how many days did we spend with wildfire smoke? So there are, you know, different kinds of disasters that we can have in Oregon. And the fact is we're more likely to have a heat disaster, which is caused by the climate effects. We're more likely to have a wildfire disaster, which again is caused by climate. And one interesting thing is that during wildfire time, when there's smoke outside, you really should not be using any kind of gas stove because you can't appropriately vent your stove. And as we're going to talk about a little later in this hour, there are quite a few noxious pollutants that are formed whenever you cook with your gas stove. And you can ameliorate that somewhat by opening a window and turning on your exhaust fan. But if you open a window, you're letting the smoke in. And even if you're turning on your exhaust fan, every crack in your house, because of the negative pressure, you're pulling in that smoky air into your house. So, again, I think the advantage of having gas for those 1 or 2 or maybe 3 days a year when you have no power is really outweighed by the health disadvantages. And remember, there are other alternatives. You know, maybe you have a barbecue outside that you could cook on. And we should have a more reliable electrical system with more community solar, more people who are able to have solar on their own roofs with good batteries. So we shouldn't have to rely on a secondary polluting, health-harming fuel source in order to live healthily and safely.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Melanie Plaut, who's with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Healthy Climate Action Team, about the dangers of gas appliances, which she just gave a little teaser about, and the mendacity of the gas industry, which, much like the tobacco industry, is trying to hide the health and environmental threats their industry promulgates. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBOO during this first week of our spring membership drive. KBOO programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, and people like you. So join now and help us meet our $56,000 goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Well, Melanie, you were just alluding to all the harm that can be produced by these gas appliances. So let's talk a bit more about the gas leaks. I know that every time I turn on my gas stove, I smell gas. And the thing that's really alarming is that the oven is even worse than the burners. There's more of a lag time. And when we've had the gas people in to like check things out, they say, oh, that's the way it is. And I also learned over the winter that when your gas furnace turns on, it gives a big little belch of methane before it kicks in. So that isn't killing us. That's just only killing the planet.
Yeah. So there's really two things that happen with your gas appliances. Number one is there is leakage of methane. Now, in theory, your furnace and your water heater are vented to the outside, and you shouldn't have much leakage within your home. But there have been some people who took some measurements. There was a fellow from one of the websites who was interested in his gas stove, and so he took some nitrogen dioxide measurements, and it turned out he had a big puff of nitrogen dioxide in the middle of the night because his furnace was not completely properly vented. So there are methane issues, but in terms of health, it's unlikely that the amount of methane that's leaking into your home would cause an explosion. I mean, that would be the worst case scenario. Methane itself doesn't have as much direct effect on your health, but the thing that really in fact is slowly killing us over time is the nitrogen dioxide, the carbon monoxide, and the particulate matter. And when you think about this, these are the same pollutants that are in car exhaust. So every time you're turning on your gas stove, it's as if you had a car exhausting into your home. Now, it's not the same quantities, of course, but it's over time been shown to be really a significant detrimental effect on your health. So, for instance, children who live in a home with a gas stove have a 42% increased risk of having asthma symptoms acutely and a 24% increased risk of having a lifetime diagnosis of asthma. And this has been found in multiple studies over the last several decades, most recently reemphasized by a meta-analysis of 41 studies in 2013. So there is no question that burning methane indoors, unlike what the gas companies would like us to believe, it's really very much not good for us. And we were quite angry at Northwest Natural because some of the climate youth testified at Multnomah County about the health effects, and Northwest Natural basically called them liars, which was not true. It's just another example of, you know, I don't think the individual people who work at Northwest Natural are evil, but the fact is, it's very difficult for somebody to understand something if their salary depends on them not understanding it. I think that's from Upton Sinclair. And that's very much the situation we're in with Northwest Natural.
I've actually had some interesting conversations with Northwest Natural employees because we've called them out several times in the last couple of years thinking we had gas leaks, and they were all benign. But I had a couple workers who came out who had to agree that gas was not safe and that Northwest Natural was basically being devious, I guess. So I don't know. I mean, that may be another way to reach in to try to organize within Northwest Natural to find employees who would actually speak out.
Yeah, it's a difficult problem for the company. The company, of course, is one of our investor-owned utilities, which means it's invested in and it's a money-making company. They are under the regulation of the Public Utility Commission, which has to okay rate hikes and their ability to recoup from their investment in new infrastructure. But they are not there for the good of the planet. They are really not there for the good of the community. They'd like you to believe that they are there for our good, but they are a profit-making center. And we can't expect them to take the lead on doing the right thing for the climate or doing the right thing for our health.
Well, I look at communities where the utility company runs both gas and electric, like PG&E in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, that is, and thinking that in a case of Northwest Natural, since their only product is gas, that they're going to be really dragging their feet much more so than a company that also was providing electricity. And I wonder how that works and what their relationship is with PGE, who is only going to benefit from this whole movement away from gas and towards electrification.
Yeah, I think it is really interesting because their only product is gas. They are under an existential threat from all of our desire to do something about the climate, and specifically from the Climate Protection Plan, which was put in place by the Department of Environmental Quality, which requires a number of companies, including Northwest Natural, to decrease their emissions by, I believe it's 50% by 2035 and 90% by 2050. Now, 2035 is not very far off. That's only 13 years away. So how is Northwest Natural going to decrease its emissions that much? And the answer is it really can't. The PUC, which supervises, you know, the ability to recoup their monies for Northwest Natural, was worried about this because as people like in my household, we were able to get off natural gas. As more and more people electrify their homes, there's going to be a smaller and smaller pool of ratepayers left to support their structure. And that's going to put a big financial burden on the remaining ratepayers. This is something that we have to figure out how we're going to not leave behind the people who are unable to get off gas.
Well, getting back to the fact that the Northwest Natural needs to reduce its carbon footprint considerably, this is where I start to wonder about, again, more creative accounting. That the so-called renewable natural gas is one way for them to do that. But I'm thinking about getting carbon offsets, which to me is another kind of scam.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if what's their game plan other than continuing to lie?
Well, they have kind of a fairy tale that they told us in this docket in front of the PUC. And the fairy tale involves some interesting and creative ideas about not only renewable natural gas, but also about hydrogen, which, you know, right now is not really an affordable or a commercially available technology, about something called gas-powered heat pumps, which, again, not commercially available at this time, and just a mix of very unlikely concepts that are not going to get us to where we need to be. And the fact is that for homes and businesses, we have current technology that can take us to a clean future without any problem. Right now, we have heat pumps, we have induction stoves, we have all these things. So it's definitely creative, but I would say that it is not a very likely scenario, and it's going to be interesting to see what plays out in the next few years in front of the PUC.
Well, you mentioned hydrogen, which we weren't talking about today, but I've been hearing rumors about these plans for this big hydrogen facility in Centralia, and I'm not sure if you've been involved in any of these email threads that are going on the last few days. The whole thing about hydrogen makes me really nervous because the people that were going to bring us the world's largest methanol refinery in Kalama, Northwest Innovation Works, well, they dissolved. I discovered like a few months ago, I was doing some checking on V. Gottlieb, who was their leader, discovered he was no longer with him. And then I found this document that they had dissolved back in September of 2021. So then I did some more checking on V. Gottlieb, and he has a new company now that he's only the vice president of called Clean Hydrogen Works. Interestingly, their logo is almost identical to NWIW's logo. Their board of directors is the same. I mean, it's the same people. And what they are doing, they're calling it clean hydrogen. They're not calling it green hydrogen.
Yes.
And actually, Aaron Saylor, who was with Columbia Riverkeeper, who's now with DEQ, gave me the rundown on the different colors of hydrogen and what they mean. And green hydrogen would be actually clean. Then there's blue hydrogen, which you use carbon offsets for.
Right.
And then there's gray hydrogen, which is just dirty. It's just using frack gas, and there's no carbon offsets. So reading between the lines with V. Gottlieb's new company, it was blue hydrogen, what they were doing.
Yeah, and it turns out, I heard a talk by a fellow named Howarth, who has done a lot of work on methane and hydrogen, and his summary is that blue hydrogen is as bad as coal because of the amount of methane that you need to use to make it. And the other thing about even green hydrogen is that if you used the renewable energy directly to run a heat pump, you'd get five times as much heat as if you use the renewable energy to make green hydrogen. So again, it's one of these technologies that's going to be extremely expensive. You can't put very much hydrogen into a pipe along with methane gas because it corrodes the pipes. There's just so many reasons that this is not a solution. I mean, again, it probably has a niche application that it is good maybe for some kind of storage when we have excess solar and wind and we want to do something with it. Maybe we should make some green hydrogen, but it's not the solution for home heating.
One of the concerns I have, because I was looking at a Googling about hydrogen, and somebody asked, is hydrogen flammable?
Well, highly. Yes, highly flammable, and it leaks. And so the idea of piping hydrogen under our streets or in our homes is just crazy.
And then the other thing, what V. Gottlieb's company would be doing is they would be storing the hydrogen in the form of anhydrous ammonia, mm-hmm. which I guess you can put through pipes because it's liquid.
Hmm.
I mean, I think about all those fertilizer plants also all the fertilizer plants in Texas that have blown up.
Yeah. I don't know much about that, but that's going to be something we need to learn about.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBRU Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Melanie Plout, who's with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Healthy Climate Action Team, about the dangers of gas appliances and the mendacity of the gas industry, which, like the tobacco industry, is trying to hide the health and environmental threats their industry promulgates. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBRU during this first week of our spring membership drive. KBRU receives 80% of our funding from our listeners, but only 10% of listeners are members. So help increase our member ratio and meet our $56,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Well, speaking about mendacity, I wanted to talk about this rate increase that Northwest Natural is proposing that is highly controversial. First of all, let's just talk about what the rate increase would be and how much it follows on a more recent rate increase.
Yeah, so Northwest Natural has asked the PUC for an okay to increase their rates by almost 12%. I believe it's 11.8%. And this follows on the heels of a rate increase that they were okayed for last year of 13%. So when you add those together, that's a huge rate increase over those 2 years. The other thing that's troubling is what that rate increase would go to. They have asked for a rate increase that would go to executive bonuses, to bonuses for all their employees. We think also that some amount of that rate increase would be used for the kinds of communications that we've already talked about that are really duplicitous. Now, Northwest Natural claims that they wouldn't use any of the ratepayer monies for direct political communications, but I think there's a fine line between what they consider you know, education for their ratepayers. When you look at their website and you see how much of it is misleading at best, you got to believe that at least some of those dollars, which come from ratepayers, are going to be used to fight against the climate mitigation and electrification that we need. And in fact, in California, one of the Southern California gas utilities is under investigation for doing exactly that, for using ratepayer monies to fight against electrification.
I also understand they're going to be using that rate increase for shareholders' benefit. Yes, I was checking that out yesterday, yeah. and that's the it was not just the bonuses for the executives and the employees, but also the shareholders also would benefit, which seems to me to be a little bit pushing the edges, too, of what's appropriate.
Right, exactly.
What do you think are the chances that this rate increase is going to go through? I know that, CUB, the Citizens Utility Board, and other groups have been, like, really organizing people to make comments.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely that the full rate will be approved. But, of course, I don't have a window into the minds of everybody on the PUC. It's very challenging as a regular person in the community to understand all the different things that come in front of this PUC related to gas. And that was one of the findings from this, I call it the Future of Natural Gas docket. And the draft staff report came out on Friday. I haven't really had a chance to talk to many of my more knowledgeable colleagues or to digest it myself, but one of the clear findings was that the PUC makes it too difficult for a normal human being to get involved and to weigh in on these gas issues, and they need to do a better job of access. So I think that's something that we should all think about whenever we can, following the lead of the Citizens Utility Board and making comments and pushing the PUC to be more open.
Actually, I think back to the old days when the PUC stood for a public utility commissioner as opposed to the commission. It used to be one person.
Is that right?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
That was back until the 80s, I think. Mm-hmm. And so we've come a long ways because we used to have this public utility dictator, basically, who was totally in the pockets of the utilities. So the commission, theoretically, is more of a democratic organization. But I'm kind of curious, in your experience, how much influence the utilities have on the decisions that the PUC makes, particularly around rate increases.
Oh, I think it's huge. You know, all of the IRPs, which are the planning sessions that the utilities do every few years in front of the PUC, they are basically led by the utilities. It's not like the people represented by the PUC say to the utility, well, what's your plan, you know, and you have to meet these requirements and start from there. It's really the utility saying, this is what we're going to do.
Well, back to the education campaign that they want to fund, that Northwest Natural wants to fund with the rate increase to, I guess, educate its customers about the glories and wonders of natural gas. There is actually some documentation that has been unearthed by Sierra Club about how much the Northwest Natural has already done in that area. This is an email that I got from Zoe Ziliak, who is representing the Sierra Club, and she says, documents obtained by the Sierra Club show that Northwest Natural sent mailers to Oregon schools offering free fossil fuel propaganda materials to use in classrooms, including a booklet titled Natural Gas, Your Invisible Friend, which sparked outrage among parents when distributed in Massachusetts schools last year. It actually reminds me of this movie that I saw when I was a kid that was made by Bell Telephone. It was Our Friend the Atom.
Uh-huh.
It was promotion of nuclear power. Oregon parents familiar with the mailers voiced concern that Northwest Natural would attempt to distribute materials in schools that ignore methane gas's major contributions to both climate change and dangerous air quality in homes. Children living in homes with gas stoves are 42% more likely to develop asthma symptoms, as Melanie just mentioned. The discovery of the Northwest Natural mailers comes amidst growing concern in Oregon over the climate and air quality impact of burning gas in homes and buildings. And then, so this is some of the examples of why Northwest Natural is so concerned. Earlier this year, the Portland Public Schools voted to phase out gas appliances in both new and existing school buildings in an effort to cut climate pollution and reduce children's exposure to dangerous air pollutants. And then they go on about the city of Eugene that we talked about earlier. So this is, I mean, these are documents. I haven't seen them. I'm hoping to actually get a copy of these documents from the Sierra Club and take a look at them. But it does sound like Northwest Natural is very busy. And the whole idea of putting these this propaganda into schools is very chilling, actually.
It's pretty shocking. I don't think that that is going to happen. I think the schools are probably too smart to allow that to happen. But, you know, we have been the victims of gas propaganda really for a century. When you think of how we think about, you know, especially gas stoves in our homes, we think they're classy, they're sophisticated, they cook really well. It's something everybody wants. Even the phrase cooking with gas was something that the gas industry promulgated in the 50s and 60s. So we have been led down a garden path to think that burning methane, burning a fossil fuel inside your home is a good idea. And I understand, you know, from the gas industry's point of view, I understand why they want to especially highlight gas stoves. Because when you think about it, most of us aren't particularly attached to our gas furnace or our gas water heater. They are out of sight and out of mind in the basement. But because of, you know, the story we've been sold about how great gas stoves are, people are attached to their gas stoves. And in many cities, when you start to talk about how new homes should be electrified, the first thing that people think about is, does that mean I can't have a gas stove? Now, luckily, there is new technology with induction stoves. And I just want to say that an induction stove is as quick to, you know, turn the heat up and turn the heat down as a gas stove, unlike those old electric coils. Works very efficiently. And in fact, it boils water more quickly than a gas stove by quite a bit, in about half the time for your big, you know, your big pot of pasta water or something like that. Induction stoves also are safer for children, for the elderly, for anybody who's disabled, because the stove itself doesn't really get hot. The heat is created by exciting the ferrous materials in the pot that you're cooking with. So the pot gets hot, but the stove itself doesn't get hot.
So you can't cook with aluminum.
It has to be something that a magnet will stick to. And I, you know, might be surprised. Just get a magnet out and test your pots and see what it sticks to. But there are huge advantages to an induction stove. Now, the gas industry will make the point that all cooking creates some indoor air pollution. And this is true because there is particulate matter, what we call PM2.5, created by any kind of cooking, especially when you sear something or you fry or you grill indoors. Some of that is going to come even if you have an electric stove. But the fact is, you will have twice as much of that PM2.5, which is highly toxic to our health, from a gas stove. And then the other combustion ingredients, like the nitrogen dioxide, which you know, is a caustic compound that irritates the lungs, and the carbon monoxide, which there is no safe level for it. And then there are other things that we know less about. Formaldehyde is produced. Some sulfur compounds are produced. So there's things that don't come at all from an induction stove that create a toxic soup in your home every time you turn on your gas stove. The other interesting thing that we recently learned about gas stoves is, number one, how quickly the nitrogen dioxide levels go up to a dangerous level. There's a fellow named Eric LaBelle out of Stanford who took a very careful look at a bunch of different gas stoves, including new ones, old ones, all different kinds. And within the time that you scramble eggs, your nitrogen dioxide levels often will exceed what the EPA considers a safe level for outdoors. There are no indoor air quality standards for nitrogen dioxide in the U.S., which is really, I think, embarrassing. There are standards in Canada. There are standards from the World Health Organization. And our homes often exceed those standards most of the time. There are many things you can do to decrease the amount of pollutants. And we can talk about those in a minute if you'd like.
Let's talk about them now, actually.
Okay.
Because I'm just thinking about the eggs I scrambled yesterday and, you know, how much I shortened my life. But, I mean, it's like one of these things. My partner and I have been talking back and forth about this for a couple of years now because she's a great cook and she loves the gas stove. And it was a really big thing when we got this gas stove.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what are the alternatives if you can't afford right now to electrify.
Right. So, you know, if you're able to put in an induction cooktop or an induction range, great. Right now, they're about the twice the cost of the gas alternative, but prices seem to be coming down as more and more people are interested in these. But there are quite a few things that you can do. So the first one is when you can cook with an electrical appliance. So if you have an Instant Pot or you have an electric tea kettle or you have one of those electric grills, use that instead of the gas stove whenever you can. The second thing is to be sure you always have good ventilation, except, of course, during wildfire season, as I mentioned. But you want to, if you have a good hood, turn it on every single time you cook. When I had a gas stove, I was guilty of only turning it on if something was smelly. I didn't turn it on every single time I boiled water or fried an egg. But in fact, you really need to do that. And you should, when you can, cook on a back burner because the hood works more efficiently when you cook on a back burner. Also, leave the fan on for a little while after you cook to help clear out the fumes that have accumulated while you were cooking. It turns out in a survey in California, fewer than 50% of people used their hoods. And we also know that a large number of homes don't have a well-functioning hood. They don't have a hood that's vented to the outside, which is really what you need. They have a hood that probably just recirculates the pollutants within the room. And you can help a little bit by opening a window in that situation. But those are some of the things you can do. And also, if you want to try out an induction cooktop at a lower cost, you can get a single burner induction cooktop for under $100.
It's just a plug-in that you just...
It's just a plug-in, right. It's just a plug-in that you can use. So there's quite a few things you can do to decrease the health risks today if what you have is a gas stove.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on Cable Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Seattle stations KVFG LP FM, KODX LPFM, KMN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. Today we're talking with Melanie Platt with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Healthy Climate Action Team about the dangers of gas appliances. And we've also been talking about the mendacity of the gas industry, which I want to get back to before we're done. This is a really good time right now for you to become involved in KABU's membership drive, our spring membership drive, which just started a few days ago. KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members like you, or hopefully members like you are going to be in just a moment. So please support this vital community institution and help us meet our $56,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KABU FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Yeah, I was just thinking about all the struggle that we've been having trying to electrify, because a few years ago we had to replace our water heater, and I really didn't want to get a gas water heater. At this point, there was enough knowledge that it seemed like a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to cost, I don't know how many thousands of dollars, to rewire the house to get a 240 outlet by where the water heater would be. And at that time also, we couldn't get a heat pump water heater because there wasn't enough space in the basement area,
mm-hmm.
enough airflow. So we wind up getting another gas water heater. Mm. So we've already been through that. Also, we're considering going towards a heat pump when we need to replace our furnace if that happens soon. But I checked out with our furnace company and a heat pump is $11,000 opposed to like $5,000 for a gas furnace. So the costs are still really prohibitive. So I'm wondering, how do we make this a technology that's available to all people and not just the well-off.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a huge, huge issue that we really should put, low and middle income people at the front of the line, because many, many people who, can't afford to electrify by themselves may already be health burdened with larger families, smaller homes where they have an increase in exposure to the pollutants from the gas stove. And we really want to be sure that this transition occurs in a just way. It's a huge, huge issue. We do have, I think, some progress on some of those fronts now. The Oregon Housing and Community Services is starting to look at electrifying homes that need weatherization. There's also monies from the Portland Clean Energy Fund, PCEF, that are going to be used for some electrification. So I think there's a big awareness of the need to do this. It's also possible that there will be some changes in the incentives that the Energy Trust of Oregon offers. One of the things that the PUC talked about in the Future of Natural Gas staff draft was changing some of those incentives to be bigger and more targeted to people who can't afford it to do it on their own. I do also think that prices will come down as more people do this whenever there's a volume effect. I mean, you think about how much prices have come down for, I don't know, our phones, our computers, all those sorts of things. So I think some of this will happen over time, but will also probably require investment and incentives from government to do it. And we need to push our governments to do that and to make that a priority.
Well, right now, just watching how difficult it's been for Biden to get the so-called Build Back Better bill passed, I try to be a perpetual optimist and express hope. And people have told me that this show gives them hope. But I mean, I've been having a really hard time holding on to that in the last few weeks and worrying about what's going to be happening in the next election. And I just wonder, with all the ignorance that we're facing, the only thing that gives me hope, actually, is reading this Facebook comment page about this proposed hydrogen plant in Centralia. And there was an interesting combination of environmentalists who were wanting to, not so fast, let's look into this and see what it really is, and people who were concerned that having a plant like that was going to turn Lewis County from a red county to a blue county. So there's a possibility of a coalition there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, we have to think, what do they say? Think globally, act locally. And if it's not a fruitful time for us to act at the national level right now, which it may or may not be, then we do have some opportunities, I think, locally here in Oregon to act. And not only can we act as a model for other places, but we can also decrease the air pollution here. Everything that we burn, we breathe. And we're learning that more and more. When we burn fossil fuels, we increase the air pollution in our cities. You don't think of Portland as having terrible air, maybe. You think we're clean and green, but we actually have pretty horrible air pollution here. So getting off the fossil fuels in all dimensions will be helpful for us and the health of our our children, our grandchildren, everybody who's living here right now. But also we can, as I said, be an example for others.
Well, I have an idea of the really long-term financing. I've been making references to the tobacco industry in my little comments. And a lot of people are drawing parallels between what the gas industry is doing in terms of basically hiding and denying the health effects that they're having and just how much damage they are doing to the, to individual health and then globally
the
to
planet.
the climate. And comparing it to the tobacco industry's years and years of obfuscation and lying and funding research that was basically bogus research that showed that there was no harm from tobacco, the while knowing that there was the harm. And I'm wondering if a similar kind of lawsuit could be set up against the gas industry, as was similar to the one that challenged the tobacco industry and finally had a huge settlement that made the tobacco industry pay out, billions of dollars.
Yes, I think that the tide is turning against the natural gas industry, but it's not turning fast enough, in my opinion. There is still, you know, when I talk to people who aren't steeped in this topic, they are surprised to hear that natural gas is so bad, both for the climate and for them individually. So I think we have an education and information gap related to the general public. We are trying to actually, a number of people are trying to make the analogy between things that we used to think were good, like lead paint, tobacco.
Lead gasoline.
Lead gasoline, right. And we have changed, and we have cleaned up, you know, the air and the water we often don't get credit for that, but we have done some really good things on those fronts. And we just need to put burning methane inside your home into that same category and realize that we don't want to be using a gas stove inside our home. And really, we need to stop burning methane that's vented to the outside, because the outdoor pollution affects us also.
Maybe one way to start is to start referring to natural gas as methane.
Yes.
I was actually thinking, because that's not totally chemically correct. It isn't just methane.
No, it's about 90%
methane. So I was thinking about calling it enhanced methane.
Yeah, I don't know. I sometimes say fossil gas or methane gas. I think we should try to avoid as much as we can the term natural gas, although, you know, people don't understand us if we get too fancy here. But, yeah, I think that transition is a good one. The other thing I wanted to be sure we talk about is, you know, Northwest Natural has been saying that they can comply with this climate protection plan that was engendered from the governor's executive order. And they spent a lot of time telling us how they can definitely clean up their supply. And yet they have sued the state to say that DEQ doesn't have the authority to institute the climate protection plan. So they're really speaking out of both sides of their mouth here, saying, yeah, we can do it, but we think, you know, maybe we can't do it, is what I read between the lines. If they're suing to say that they don't want to have a climate protection plan, then there must be a reason why they think it's not going to work.
Yeah, well, actually, they're doing that in collaboration with the Portland Business Alliance and some other key players, I understand.
Yeah, I just heard that it was the three gas utilities, but there may be other business partners involved, too.
So what do we do? We've got another minute to go. What do we do to change course here?
Oh, gosh. so many things. You know, I've talked about the things that you can do for your personal health. I would say, as much as possible, try not to invest in personal gas infrastructure in your home. Now, what this means is you have to think a little bit ahead, because if you have an emergency and you need a new furnace, you may not have time to get the electrician out to do some of the work. You may not have time to investigate the incentives. So if you have something that's aging and on its last legs, that's a good time to replace it. And I think we need to hold everybody accountable. We need to hold the legislature accountable. There's an interesting task force called the Rebuilding Task Force, which is going to look at some of our building codes. We need to hold the PUC responsible. We can weigh in on the rate hikes. And we need to hold our local government officials accountable, too. There may be opportunities with your county or your city to take action on gas, and also to be sure, as we've talked about, that we do this in a just way.
Well, Melanie, it's great to talk with you, and it's really great to see you almost in person, just a glass between us.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe soon we'll actually be able to be in the same room together when we're on the air. So thanks for being on Locus Focus.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Melanie Platt with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Healthy Climate Action Team. And you've been listening to Locus Focus on KU Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us reach our $56,000 goal during this first week of our spring membership drive by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori. We're going to go out with some music by Joni Mitchell. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.
Took a look at his license plate.